Now, some of the devotees here have attended this festival of the Holy Name before, and some have not. So, a little introduction to the concept of what we're doing together. Each of us, different stages of our practice of devotional service, we're engaged in this wonderful activity of chanting Krishna's holy name, because scriptures teach us and our acharyas teach us and our founder Acharya especially has given the Yuga Dharma, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift of the primary means to achieve spiritual perfection is through the medium of chanting the holy name. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us that perfection of life, the highest stage, not only of love of God, Krishna Prema, but that kind of love that the residents of Vrindavan experience in relation to Krishna by following its topmost through this primary activity of chanting. So the idea of behind the festival of the Holy Name is, of course, Sankirtan, congregational chanting, and the other form of chanting that we primarily do, japa, chanting on our beads, some prescribed rounds each day. And then various other manifestations or exhibitions of displays of chanting the holy name, glorifying Krishna through his holy name, various ways of doing that through bhajan and drama and katha like this. Some of you may know Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, described that along with the chanting of the holy name, because the chanting of the holy name is Krishna, Krishna himself, very same, abhinatvam nama namino, same, Krishna. But Krishna is always with who? Who is Krishna always with? Radharani. So the swarup shakti of Krishna, Mahaprabhu teaches, is the Krishna Katha, the Bhagavat Katha, the description of the glories of the personality of Godhead. So some of that will be presented this festival of the Holy Name weekend. So various ways aimed at helping us to enter into the special dispensation for this age, the chanting of the Holy Name, more effectively, more successfully. And this particular festival of the Holy Name has a theme. And the theme is how, or the role of humility in assisting us to go more deeply into the chanting of the Holy Name. In fact, it's not even optional, it's essential. Many of you, little more experienced devotees, because there are some new devotees here, new guests and devotees. Lord Chaitanya, along with the glories of the Holy Name in his eight prayers, Shikshastakam, in the third verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches that in order to get a taste for the Holy Name, the first item on his list is humility. So, durdaivam idrishim ahajni nanuraga. Anurag means spiritual taste, anurag. And nanuraga is no taste, no attraction. Nanuraga. Even knowing the glories, I have no attraction for the name. So the antidote is given in the next line. Trinnadapi sunichenati. Entering into a mood of humility. So the part that I'm going to participate in this festival, Holy Name Weekend, is describing from these prayers of Lord Brahma, found in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, this very deep, not shallow, very deep mood of humility that he expresses in his prayers in Canto 10, Chapter 14. So there's a picture of Lord Brahma seated on his lotus, and you can see in the background there's an ocean with big waves and turmoil in the ocean. That's the Garbhodak Ocean in the background. And Lord Brahma, pictured here, he is, we'll say some of his glories. So we'll understand when he speaks, it's authoritative. He's the firstborn living being, according to the Vedic literature, born directly from the body of Lord Vishnu on his lotus. And he is the receiver of transcendental knowledge, all of the Vedas, directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, imparted within his heart. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. And then in turn, he established the Siptic succession, which we are part of, the Siptic succession from Lord Brahma. So he's the top authority. His capacity for intelligence is inconceivable. And we're going to hear in these prayers repeatedly how he correctly places the role of discerning capacity to understand the personality of Godhead is it's inadequate. It will never be adequate. Even up to the position of the most intelligent being in the whole universe. Lord Brahma is so intelligent. His potency is so great that he puts the universe together in its is far detailed in all the little details. And all of the big plan, he received the plan, he received directly from the personality of Godhead, and he understood it and he put the universe together. In just as a for example. So for example, modern science has discovered this amazing feature of RNA and DNA and strands of amino acids and bases put together in different combinations makes, ta-da, the key of life. So who put that together? Well, ask the scientist. And they'll say, it's chance. Just random combination. Without going into, you know, the strength of that argument, Vedas declare Lord Brahma, not only he knew about it before the scientist knew about it, he assembled the whole thing in various details. I was thinking about it just yesterday morning. What an amazing, just take anything and how amazing it is. The seasons changing and the trees know when to drop their leaves and when to bundle up, and then in the springtime comes the whole display of spring, and from that, just like this tree right outside my window, it's some kind of a berry tree and beautiful flowers, and the flowers drop and looks like it's winter time because all the flowers are blowing all over the place. And then there's these berries and the birds and the squirrel, this little squirrel that comes diddy-bopping by the windowsill every day. He's very regulated. But the tree is supplying something to eat, and etc. It's an amazing arrangement. And he's the arranger. Of course, he's doing so under the power of the source of all power. He just has a little piece of the power of the source of all power. But he's very, very powerful. Unbelievable. His position is so important that if there isn't a qualified jiva soul to take this post at the beginning of each creation, Krishna does it himself. It's such an important post. We know this term avatar. I'm sure all of us in the room, even the new people, know the term avatar. One who descends from the spiritual realm to this realm, that's avatar. Lord Brahma is in the category, has two categories of avatar out of six. He's the avatar. He's in charge of the mode of passion for the purpose of creation. And he's invested, so he's a guna avatar. And he's a shaktivesh avatar. The potency of the Supreme Lord for creation is invested in its fullness in him. And that's a lot of potency. In fullness. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada specifically writes that Brahma is so powerful that he is many times compared to, in fact, there's a verse when Shukadeva Goswami says it. He's many times considered as powerful as the Supreme Lord, although he's not. He's so powerful. His power is so great, it's inestimable. But whatever the power he has is derived from the source of all power, not all of which Lord Brahma has. So, when he speaks these prayers, made of 12 Mahajans mentioned in the 7th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, he's one. Out of entirety of all of the creation, he's one. Great, great, great authority. So when he speaks, it's truth. At the same time, he has all these qualifications. He's amazingly humble. And we'll highlight that in the course of his prayers. So this presentation is now going to describe these prayers from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 14, the prayers of Lord Brahma. In order to understand anything in Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, it's important to understand the context. So we'll next go to the context of his prayers by covering chapters 12 and 13 really fast, but with images because it's really nice. Prabhupada said that these pictures are windows into the spiritual world. So if you want to know what the spiritual world looks like, fasten your seatbelt. We're going to go there through pictures and sound. And another thing is, this is modern educators say, some people are more visual than auditory, and some people are more abstract thinkers than either of those. However, by connecting messages with images, it helps to fix the message. So, I grew up in Krishna consciousness like that, and so, excuse me if you don't like images, but we're going to have a whole bunch of images here. And I think it'll help. There are many paintings of this presentation of Lord Brahma kneeling before Krishna by different artists in the history of Vaishnavism. You'll see some other ones. But this one is very special. Very special. So we'll see it again and again, this image. There is Krishna with his left arm raised, and in his left hand, you'll see, look closely, there's a lump of yogurt and some fruit. And he's leaning on his cane, stuck in his, hanging over his shoulder is a buffalo horn. Of course, Krishna has his flute, and we'll hear Brahma's description of what he sees before him. And very nonchalantly, Krishna is listening to these 40 verses of very beautiful prayers. We'll cover them. So it starts chapter 12. Starts where Krishna is just 4 years old. Think of somebody. How old is your son? What's his age? Huh? Eight. You're getting bigger. Any children here that are four? They're probably outside making noise somewhere. Krishna was just four. It's described in Gopal Champu that when Krishna was three, he wanted to herd the cows. So in the cowherd community, unlike the brahmanas and the kshatriyas, when boys turn five, they go to school. When boys turn five in the Vaishya community, there's a little ceremony and they go and assist their parents in the activities of their parents. In this case, herding the cows. But Krishna was precocious. He was big for his age, mature for his age. When he was three, he wanted to herd the cows. So he went to Mother Jasoda and pleaded with Mother Jasoda, please let me herd the cows. And she said, oh, you're so little. The cows are so big. You know how big those cows are? No, you just grow up a little bit, and when you turn five, you can herd the cows. And Krishna was adamant. First he asked nicely, but then he was like very determined. Mother Jasoda didn't know what to do. So she went to Nanda Maharaj and said, can you talk to Nanda Nandana? You know how mothers put the pressure on the fathers. Can you speak to Nanda Nandana and convince him not to herd the cows? Krishna was adamant. He insisted to herd the cows. So Nanda Maharaj brokered a deal. He said, you can herd the calves. But you have to come back for lunch every day. Because the cows, they're out all day long. Who knows what could happen? So there's a description of a big festival that the dharma of the family is being taken up by the son at 3 years of age. So they had a big festival. And in honor of Krishna going out for the first time at 3 years old to herd the calves. And different persons brought gifts. Someone brought him his first flute. And someone gave him a buffalo horn. Someone gave him rope for tying around the calves in case they went astray. And Mother Jasoda, pictured, she gave Krishna shoes and a white umbrella. And she presented them to Krishna. Specifically is described those shoes that curl around at the end. They're popular in Rajasthan still. There's some name, you probably know in Hindi what the name is. Those little pointy shoes that curl around. So Krishna refused. He said, I can't accept something that the cows don't have. If you make shoes for every one of Nanda Maharaja's calves, then I can accept, as well as an umbrella. Because we're protectors of the cows. We can't take something they don't have. The Mother Jasoda tried to reason with Krishna. She said, Lord Narayan, he's already given them shoes. Look at, they have these things on their end of their feet, and they already have shoes. And they're accustomed to being out in the sun. They don't need an umbrella. Krishna insisted. Doesn't say what how it ended up. I don't think she made shoes for all the calves. Krishna went without shoes. And that went on for a whole year. When Krishna became four, he had an idea to perform a certain pastime. So he didn't tell Mother Jasoda what that pastime was. He just told Mother Jasoda, today, we're not going to come back at lunchtime. You please prepare lunch. We can take it with us. She said, no, this can't do that. Anything could happen. You're just 4 years old and out by yourselves alone. Krishna said, then I'll go alone without lunch. It was very determined. So she made lunch, and all the other cowherd boys had their lunch. And off they went to herd the calves for the whole day. There you see Balaram with his plow and Sridham by the side of Mother Jasoda. Many, many, just like the beautiful scene from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Mother Jasoda is so attached to Krishna, she can't bear being separate from Krishna. So she would come and adjust his garland and put some extra samosas in his bag and make sure that Balaram stood by his side, because Krishna can do all kinds of mischievous things, but you're his elder brother, you please protect him. And finally, Krishna said, Mother Jasoda, we have to go now. So off they went, herding the cows. And many, 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 many cows. That the chapter 12 says the calves were asankhyata. Asankhyata means too many to count. And same, the cowherd boys. So many, many, many. Well, when they were herding the calves, they weren't really herding the calves. They were just playing, and the calves loved Krishna, so they stayed with Krishna wherever Krishna went. This is from that chapter 12. As you see on the right, there's a peacock, so they would imitate the posture of the strutting peacock, or the frog that's ready to jump, or the bird that's ready to fly, making the sounds of each of these animals, sometimes swinging from the trees, sometimes, this is Madhu Mangal, here's Krishna snatched his lunch, holding it up in the air, and Madhu Mangal is in anxiety running after Krishna to get his lunch. The cowherd boys are laughing. There's another lunch down here on the floor. Playing like little children. Sometimes Krishna would sit underneath a tree, play upon his flute, and the cowherd boys would just be mesmerized, enjoying Krishna's company. They spent their day. And then around 11 o'clock, right on schedule, there was a big demon. Agasura. And he was right in the path that the cowherd boys would regularly travel, and they thought, we never saw a big cave on the path like this before. What is it? And as they got closer, they were curious. As they got closer, they found there was this hot air coming from the mouth of the cave, and it had this bad, fishy smell. And then they realized, this isn't a cave. This is a big serpent lying in the road. But Krishna has always protected us. Let's go inside and explore. And off they went. All these asankhyata cowherd boys. And the Bhagavatam describes Krishna became overwhelmed by his own yogamaya potency at this moment, because it's part of yogamaya is for Krishna's pastimes. And he became bewildered. He wanted to call out to the cowherd boys, don't go inside. But it wasn't just because he was concerned for their safety, that they might be harmed by the big serpent. Rather, he was considering our acharyas know Krishna's thoughts somehow, because Krishna is very kind and he discloses these things. Krishna was thinking, these cowherd boys, they can't stand separation from me even for a moment. when we're passing through the forest and there's a tree in between myself and another cowherd boy, and for a few moments they can't see me. For them it feels like years have passed and they're in big anxiety, and then we're on the other side of the tree and everything's okay again. They're so attached to me. How will they bear separation from me? But it was too late. They had already entered into the mouth of Agasura. So Yogamaya, bewildering Krishna influence, subsided, withdrew. And then Krishna knew what to do. He also entered into the mouth of Agasura, which was exactly what Agasura was waiting for. And Agasura closed his mouth. And then Krishna expanded his body bigger, 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 and Agasura suffocated. The soul of Agasura was made visible somehow, because the soul is too tiny, we can't see the soul. But the effulgence of the soul of Agasura went up in the air. The cowherd boys left the mouth of Agasura, and the soul of Agasura merged into the body of Krishna. Gave him liberation. Sayuja Mukti. And then, time for lunch. So the cowherd boys went and had their lunch. Meanwhile, Lord Brahma had come to see his master, because he knew Krishna had appeared on earth and was performing his pastimes in Vrindavan, and he saw that amazing situation, this huge serpent being killed by this little boy. And then afterwards they're sitting around together playing just like little boys. The description is given. One of the cowherd boys said, "Oh, my mother made the best preparation." Here Krishna would open his mouth and they push the food into Krishna's mouth and he'd smile. And other boys would make jokes and laugh and carry on and just playing like little children play. We know how little children play when they're together. They're playing just like little children. And Lord Brahma, seeing this scene from his swan carrier above, he was amazed. And he became, for a moment, bewildered. Who is this little boy? He's... looks like he's all powerful, but he's conducting himself like he's not. Just a little boy. And what is the extent of his power? What will he do if I do something to challenge his power? Maybe I'll take all the cowherd boys and all the calves, and then is Krishna going to cry? Or maybe Krishna will come and fall at my feet and say, "Please return the calves and the cowherd boys." What's he going to do? So he became inspired. This now we're already chapter 13. Here's the verse on the left. Oh, Maharaj Parikshit, Brahma, who resides in the higher planetary system in the sky, had observed the activities of the most powerful Krishna in killing and delivering Agasura, and he was astonished. Now, that same Brahma wanted to show some of his own power and see the power of Krishna, who was engaged in his childhood pastimes, playing as if with ordinary cowherd boys. Therefore, in Krishna's absence, Brahma took all the boys and calves to another place. Thus, he became entangled. For in the very near future, he would see how powerful Krishna was. And so, enjoying their lunch together with all the cowherd boys together, the cows, as cows will, calves, as they will do, were looking for fresh grasses, wandering here and there. And some of the cowherd boys noticed, "Oh, the calves have gone. They've strayed away." Krishna said, "Don't worry. You finish your lunch. I'll go." So when Krishna went to bring the calves back, Lord Brahma came and kidnapped all the cowherd boys, Krishna's dearmost friends, beloved devotees. He kidnapped them and put them in a cave. So when Krishna came back with the calves, the cowherd boys were gone. And when Krishna was looking for the cowherd boys, Brahma took the calves. And he put all the calves and all the cowherd boys in a cave. And he went back to the scene of the crime, as criminals will sometimes do. And wanted to see what Krishna was going to do. When he went back, he saw all the cowherd boys and all the calves having lunch. He was amazed. There's Brahma up in the sky. He was amazed. So we went back to the cave, and there they were in the cave. So there's doubles. Krishna had expanded, because Krishna is the source of everything, his cowherd boyfriends included. Krishna had expanded to himself as identical forms of each cowherd boy and each calf, for another purpose, a transcendental purpose. What was that transcendental purpose? Because Brahma's time, just moments passed, but on earth a whole year had passed. For 1 year, and please note, Balaram wasn't here when this pastime took place. It was part of Krishna's arrangement, because what to do if Balaram is present? So Balaram wasn't present. Then for one whole year, all the cowherd boys had gone back home, and their mothers didn't detect, this isn't my son, this is an expansion of Krishna as my son. They didn't see that, because all those of you that are mothers, do you think you could not recognize your own child? Like, kind of looked like them? Not possible. But it happened, because Krishna had expanded himself in such a way. And then the mothers, they had this desire to have Krishna as their son. So Krishna fulfilled their desire. He became their son for a whole year. And their affection, they were astonished that their affection for their son became equal to their affection for Krishna, because mothers may have affection for some other child in addition to their own child, but they naturally have special affection for their own child. It's natural. But in Vrindavan, they have more affection for Krishna than their own child. Now their affection for their child is becoming like their affection for Krishna. They were astonished. And the calves were identical calves. So the cows, having motherly affection towards Krishna, they wanted to directly feed Krishna. So Krishna became a calf, identical to theirs. And they became fully satisfied. This was another one of the many things Krishna was accomplishing through this pastime. So when Brahma saw all these cowherd boys, duplicate forms, he didn't know what to make of it. So what did Krishna do? Each of the cowherd boys manifested simultaneously, because you see the cowherd boy tilting back and popping some food in his mouth, and simultaneously, each one of the innumerable cowherd boys and calves manifested Vishnu forms or Narayana forms. And surrounding each of those Narayana forms, each unlimited potencies, unlimited living entities, and the personified Vedas chanting their glories in a cacophony of sound. In the verses, it says, all the Vishnumurtis were surrounded by the opulences, headed by Anima city. So Krishna possesses all mystic powers. What's the name of Krishna that says he possesses, or the master of all mystic power? Yogeshwara. So he manifested these mystic powers, personified, and they were glorifying him. And mystic potencies headed by Aja. Our acharyas explained this. Aja means Radharani, or his internal potencies, his Swarup Shakti. and so many other potencies, subpotencies of his internal potency. And the 24 elements for the creation of the material world, they have their spiritual counterparts in the spiritual world. And all of these, each one of the Vishnu forms had all of these different potencies personified, singing the glories of Lord Vishnu. Pretty amazing. Then Lord Brahma saw that Kala, or time, Swabhava, one's own nature, Sanskara, purificatory procedures, Kama, desire, Karma, and the modes of nature, their own independence being completely subordinate to the potency of the Lord, had all taken forms and were worshipping those Vishnumurtis. It was circuit overload. Brahma fainted right before Krishna, as you see seated in the front, because these are all expansions of Krishna. As the cowherd boys are expansions of Krishna and the forms of Vishnu, because they're actually Vishnu forms or Vishnu tattva as cowherd boys or as Lord Vishnu manifesting all these various potencies. The commentary says, Nija Mahi Mani. Money means a jewel. Mahi Mani. Nija, the unlimited potencies. The unlimited supreme manifesting, unlimited potencies. Brahma fainted. And when he came to external consciousness again, he looked up and he saw the same thing. And then all of a sudden, they all disappeared. Poof. They were gone. Krishna withdrew those manifestations of him, and just alone was Krishna standing before Lord Brahma. That's the end of chapter 13. By the way, chapter 13 was the last chapter that Srila Prabhupada personally gave his Bhaktivedanta purports to. Read that chapter, read the purports, look at the images of Srila Prabhupada in his final days. How is it possible in that condition that he gave beautiful, eloquent, very deep and profound purports? It makes it very clear Prabhupada was not on the material platform. Not at all. Oh, now we're going to be covering two sets of verses this morning. Verses 1 through 8, how to know the unknowable. Well, that's a contradiction of terms, by the way. That which is unknowable, you can't know. So how to know the unknowable, that which can't be known. You can't. And what to speak of unknowable. This unknowable has unlimited potencies. So how can that which is limited know the unlimited? How can the unknowable become known? Brahma discloses that in these prayers, and the answer is through humility. And we'll see the strain of his humility, and especially for us who are chanters of the holy name, this humility is not optional if we want to go more deeply into the holy name. So listen very carefully, not only to the words or the message of Brahma, but to the mood of humility that's pervading all of these wonderful prayers. And his prayers... Whoops, what happened? There's a slide missing. What happened? Okay. Well, because of the light in the room, we can't see the whole prayer. I'll just read the translation. Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Lord. the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you, O son of the king of the cowherds. Your transcendental body is dark blue like a new cloud. Your garment is brilliant like lightning, and the beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunja earrings and the peacock feather on your head. Wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves. Can't read it. And equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn, and a flute, you stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand. So this is like darshan. Now we have deity darshan, and the devotees that dress the deity each morning were very expectant when the curtain opens, the conch blows, and we see how Kishore Kishori are nicely decorated. And we are instructed to worship the deity form of the Lord in the mood of Aishwarya or opulence, and it inspires awe and reverence seeing the beauty. Even Krishna is holding his flute, we decorate him very opulently. Lord Brahma, he's going to mention this, but I'll highlight it now. He's seeing yet another form or feature of Krishna, this very, very, very special, unique feature of Krishna in Vrindavan. Whereas Mother Jasoda, as the queen of Nanda Maharaj, the king, she has all kinds of opulences to offer to Krishna. But Krishna likes the simple forest flower garland. Found here in this verse. And the gunja berries, you can't read it so well, it's up here. Gunja abatangsa, that's this line here. Gunja abatangsa, and this is his peacock feather. And this lasan mukhaya, that's his form that's like a fresh monsoon cloud. Vanya srajay, you can't read it. Vanya srajay, wearing a garland of various forest flowers and leaves. Krishna likes them more than pearls and diamonds and all kinds of fabulous jewels that Mother Jasoda has accessible. But he likes far more. It's his mood. And the flower-bearing trees and bushes and plants, that's their happiness to offer these flowers. So it's a reciprocation of love. Kavala is translated here at the bottom. He's holding a morsel of food in his hand. Specifically, our acharyas say his left hand. They make a big deal about it, because he eats with his right hand. Brahma is bewildered to see this form. And Vetra, Vishana, Venu, Lakshma Shriye. He's holding, or you look at the picture again, you'll see, he's equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn, and a flute. He's giving very mercifully. Brahma is describing for us, and the artists have rendered into a painting, this darshan of Krishna in Vrindavan. Four-year-old boy, apparently. Actually, he's the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead, but appearing in this amazing, very simple, opulent form. So now, This is in reverse order. Some brother now from Krishna responding, I'm a cowherd boy. Why are you worshiping me? You're Lord Brahma. Brahma literally means you're the greatest, most powerful, most knowledgeable, all-knowing person in the universe. That's you. Why are you offering prayers and obeisances to me? And so then he replies, my dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, which has shown such mercy to me. That body of Krishna showed, because he wanted to see the limit of Krishna's opulences, which are unlimited. So Krishna gave him a show. Expanded as the coward boys, expanded the coward boys as Vishnu forms and all of the potencies that sometimes are disclosed, sometimes are withheld. He showed it all at once, that transcendental body of Krishna. You showed this body of yours, transcendental body of yours, has shown such mercy to me, and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your pure devotees. That's this sva icha mayasya. Icha, maya. Sanatana Goswami focuses on, in his commentary, focuses on this. Icha means desire. And maya means potency. So Krishna has icha shakti or icha maya, and he does whatever he wants to do. What he wants to do is please his devotees, especially these residents of Vrindavan. They see this special form. Brahma is seeing the special form. Brahma, different than, they don't see the almightiness, the majesty of Krishna's form. They just see the wonderful friend or the wonderful son or the wonderful beloved. Brahma has this very strong sense of majesty. He has to be the creator of the universe. He has to understand about potencies and the extent of them and how to utilize them for the purpose of serving Krishna, making the creation. But Brahma is marveling at Krishna's mercy, where he's showing him, Brahma, this little four-year-old boy, transcendental body of yours, is fulfilling my desire, but he's also fulfilling the desire of the Vrindavan residents. Such merciful form. I can't understand the limits of you. And you can't see so well this manasantara, manasantarena. That's this line. Manasantarena, which means that his mind, you can't see these things unless the mind is purified. So his mind has been withdrawn from all material affairs. That is to say, the material affairs of creation, he's involved. Now he's in Vrindavan, and he's not involved in his acts of creation. He has withdrawn his mind completely from those material affairs. Now he's seeing this form of Krishna, but he's stating, I can't possibly understand this personal form. And then what to speak of the happiness that you experience within yourself, specifically within the happiness that you experience when you're having lunch with the cowherd boys and all of the other pastimes that you perform with your devotees in Vrindavan, how much happiness you're experiencing. I can't fathom it. What to speak of that, even your body. I can't understand this. That's why I'm offering my prayers, because all glories unto you, in other words. And with further detail. So, our acharyas, to help us go to the next verse, they add Krishna's response, Brahma's in essence saying, I desire to examine the extent of your potency. I desire to understand how you'll react to my showing my power. In turn, you have shown such mercy to me by giving me a glimpse of who you actually are. Now, Brahma's next is this theme of the section. How can one estimate something that is unlimited, which can produce unlimited entities, and each one of those entities having unlimited potencies? How is it possible? Because he's Brahma. He's highly intelligent. He wants to understand. And he's understanding that I can't understand. Just like when we're chanting and trying to chant with full attention. Try it. What do you find? You can't. Unless there's mercy. Then, with mercy, that which is impossible becomes possible. So he understands, different than my capacity for understanding things on my own power, I require this other approach, this other process, the process of bhakti. And now let's chant together this, simultaneously, this wonderful verse. Jnane prayasam udapasvante jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiyavartam stanes tatakshuti gatam tadavan manobir ye prayaso jita jito pyasitais trilokyam. Very famous verse, Prabhupada's translation from the Bhagavatam. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and, with their body, words, and mind, offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. So, mention a few things, and we'll go on. I put this word jivanti in like big letters because in his commentary, Jiva Goswami makes special emphasis on jivanti. And we'll see it comes again in a future two more verses later. Jivanti, live in devotion to Krishna, because that's living. Living in devotion, just stay in a life of devotion to Krishna somehow. Just faithfully abide in a life of devotion to Krishna. Well, there's a little qualifier. Bhavadiyavartan. Dedicating your lives to these narrations. What's narrations? Shruti Gatam. Descriptions of personality and activities. Description of your personality and activities. Dedication of one's life. So the purpose of life for such a devotee? Hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam, Bhagavad Dharma, immersion in hearing the glories of the personality and the activities and the form and the name of the Supreme Lord. Tanavan Manobhir, with body, mind, and words. San Mukharitam indicates that which comes from Krishna or Krishna's pure devotees. From their mukha, from their mouth. And then this line at the top, Jnane Prayasam. Those of you that have a little bit of the Sanskrit language, Prayasa means endeavor. Jnane Prayasa. So the endeavor to understand the absolute truth by speculation Udapashya, throw it away. Completely, completely discard it. Jnane prayasa udapashya. Namanta eva, offer your obeisances and prayers and praise. Jivanti, live in that condition. Which ones? Those that are heard from you himself, Krishna, or your devotees. And dedicate your lives to those things. Stay in your position. You don't have to become a sannyasi or a this or a that. You have to follow the standards that meet the conditions described here, and those conditions have descriptions, what it means, but dedicate yourself in that way. Stay in your position. Same as what Krishna is saying to Arjuna. Don't give up your position. Stay in your position. Be a child. Whatever your psychophysical nature is, dedicate that to Krishna. Tanavan manobhir. Ye prayasa. This is translated by Sanatan Goswami as, this is the means. Similar to this prayasam up here, this is prayaso. This is the means. This method of bhakti is the means of conquering jitta or ajitta, he who can't be conquered becomes conquered. How does he become conquered? He becomes conquered by love. He who is unconquerable becomes conquered by love. Living jivanti, living with life in the life of devotion. This verse is so important. Those of you who are a little familiar with Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is Ramananda Roy, the king of Madras, and at the time of Lord Chaitanya, they met. Later that evening, they had discussions. Lord Chaitanya began the discussion by asking Ramananda Roy, this is where their conversation began, can you please describe the goal of life and how to achieve it? That's where they started. Ramananda Roy was a very elevated scholar and suggested many elevated, very highly lauded messages, and Lord Chaitanya kept saying, oh, it's external, go on. When he spoke this verse, Lord Chaitanya said, yes, this is it. Goal of life and how to achieve it. Now go further. Explain it more. So it was introduced by Ramananda Roy, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Pure devotional service without any touch of speculative knowledge is the essence of perfection. And no surprise, Rupa Goswami says the same thing in his essential verse of the entire Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anya vilashata shunyam jnana karma janavratam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. This is same message. Perfection. The essence of perfection. This verse is a very important verse. In a section of the Bhagavatam where Hamsa avatar, there you see him up here, Supreme Lord taking the form of a swan, he's instructing Lord Brahma. And these four little boys down here, they're the four Kumaras, the sons of Lord Brahma. And Hamsa avatar is explaining this position of how to view the world. How does a devotee, how does one who's situated in this pure devotional service see the world? If you don't see the world, say it negative, if you don't see the supreme, the relationship between matter and Krishna, we can't see the world in which we live properly or accurately. And then from that initial error of not seeing the connection of all things with Krishna, our lives are similarly an illusory existence. So it's a fundamental step to see everything. It's like a big step, but see everything has its relationship, sambandha. It has its relationship with the source. Now Brahma, who is in a better position than Brahma to see the relationship of all things? He's the creator of the whole thing, whole cosmic manifestation. At least one of the universes within it. So Brahma's hearing from Hamsa Avatar, this is a must. So that's, all of that becomes possible, that is, seeing the relationship between matter and Krishna is an essential part of bhakti, because we're engaging stuff, objects, in Krishna's service, using our senses, which are creations of matter, in Krishna's service, and he's beyond the limits of the senses. He's at Hokshaja. But he can be accessed, and the unknowable can be known through the medium of bhakti. This is again Ramananda Roy having his discussion with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, going beyond this verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. In very advanced stages, the Mahabhagavata stage, Ramananda Roy says, the advanced devotee certainly sees everything mobile and immobile, but he does not exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord. It's easy to take any one of these topics and just go on and on. They're so wonderful. I have to keep conscious of time. I remember having a discussion with Rabindra Sarup Prabhu on this, because the way that Prabhupada said it in a lecture, I heard the same lecture. Rabindra Sarup, being a PhD in philosophy, hearing the same lecture, he was deeply pondering over the subject matter. Prabhupada said, when a pure devotee sees a tree, he doesn't just see a tree, he sees Krishna. This rendering. So Rabindra, the philosopher, PhD philosopher, was wondering, does that, okay,
out the window.
And what does a pure devotee see? Well, he doesn't exactly see their forms. He sees them, but doesn't exactly see that he sees Krishna. Now what's that like? Or what does it mean? Like, you know, there's Krishna and there's so many trees, there's a whole forest of Krishnas. What does it mean? What does it mean? Well, we won't know until we're Mahabhagavata. We could speculate, what does it mean? If we'll never understand that way. But the Mahabhagavata, Ramananda Roy, is describing what the Mahabhagavata sees. He sees everything mobile and immobile, but not exactly simply their forms. He sees Krishna. And that's, in a way, what Brahma is saying here. By speculation, these things can't be known, but by this dedication of one's life to these glorifications of Krishna's personality and his activities and his form, dedicating your life to these things and his name, then these unknowable things become knowable because the unlimited discloses, I am like this. There's a reference at the bottom right to a verse from this same chapter, chapter 14, verse 35. Brahma there is marveling. Those who dedicate themselves to you, how are you going to reciprocate with them? You're so merciful. You've reciprocated with me because I was curious about the limit of your potencies, and you've shown me the potencies aren't limited. But you've also shown me your personal form, and you disclosed some things about your personal form. That's just your kindness upon me. When I was challenging you, you just showed me kindness. With Putana, there she is, the big demoness, you arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members. Well, you can't read because of the sunlight. It's in that verse, it says, Sa, kula. Sa means with, and kula means family. Our acharyas explained that Putana had two brothers. Her two brothers were Agasura and Bakasura. They came to avenge the death of Putana. Krishna gave to Putana the position of a mother in Goloka Vrindavan to assist Mother Jasoda. Wow. You're such a benevolent, giving personality. To Putana, you gave yourself. To Agasura and Bakasura, you gave yourself. You entered into their mouth. Your spiritual form entered into those demons' mouths. You gave yourself to them. So what are you going to do with these residents in Vrindavan, whose lives and hearts are completely dedicated only unto you? How are you going to reciprocate with them? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in two words, you cannot. And Krishna says to the residents of Vrindavan, to the gopis, I cannot repay you. You just have to accept your happiness and loving devotion. And so that's how he reciprocates. Here's a painting of Krishna entering into the mouth of Bakasura. He wanted very much to put Krishna in his beak. So Krishna got in his beak, but wouldn't go down his throat. He tried to swallow, Krishna couldn't. And eventually, you see, Krishna broke out of the, he expanded his body, broke out of the beak and bifurcated the beak. Here's the cowherd boys assisting Krishna, beating Bakasura with sticks. And here's a painting of Agasura. When Krishna entered the mouth of Agasura, the demigods hidden behind the clouds exclaimed, "Alas, alas!" But the friends of Agasura, like Kamsa and other demons, were jubilant. There goes Krishna and Balaram inside the mouth, except Balaram wasn't there. They made a mistake in this painting. Balaram wasn't there. But then, of course, when Krishna expanded himself and all the cowherd boys left the mouth of Agasura, Kamsa and the other demons weren't so jubilant. But Krishna reciprocates with the love of the residents of Vrindavan by nurturing their love. And this is one of my favorite paintings. Without the fullness of the color, it just doesn't do justice to the painting. But it's such a beautiful painting, in one painting showing all five rasas. And the love that each one of the personalities in those five rasas feels for Krishna. Really beautiful painting. Of course, Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda in parental affection, the gopis in the conjugal affection, the cowherd boys in friendship and servant and neutrality, all five rasas are depicted. That's how Krishna repays, strengthening their love, and especially the love of the gopis, most glorified in Srimad Bhagavatam and by our acharyas. That's how Krishna reciprocates, to strengthen and enhance and stir and amplify and give them various exchanges where their love becomes unlimitedly increased. That's how he reciprocates. In his commentary, Sanatana Goswami makes, right at the very beginning, this Gyane Prayasa verse, he refers to a verse from the Upanishads that states, Tam eva viditva. Freedom is possible only by understanding Brahman. And then the question he asks is, if that's the case, then how can an ignorant person attain liberation? And he states, this verse answers that question. Because it's through devotion. It's not by the understanding through devotion, not by the power of speculation. So that was verse 3. We didn't get very far yet. I'm looking at time. I hope you're patient. We'll still have breakfast. Hang on. So, little summarization so far. By the hearing process, we develop such a loving, trusted relationship with Krishna that he will say, I'm like this. You wanted to see me as I am. You wanted to serve me. Such a deep desire for so long. And I have tested you so many times and you only chose me. Now, here I am. Krishna has shown this special, special mercy to Lord Brahma. Now Brahma understands this has not been possible by the power of speculation. It's possible by devotion. So, O Krishna, O Ajita, you are conquered by this path. Let me say more about this glorious process in contrast to Gyan. No, now we'll go a little more quickly. The first line, Shreya, Shritim, Bhaktim. That's the best. Devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. The translation reads in red, you can't read it. However, Udashya, Te Vibho. Some persons may give up bhakti and try instead to understand the cultivation of speculative knowledge. Kevala bodha labhyate. What do they get, Klishyanti? Simply trouble. And kleshala, misery. Translation. My dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. So I'm going to try to move a little more quickly here. This is a photograph of wheat growing on a stalk in a wheat field. So many of you have seen in Vrindavan at harvest time, they cut the wheat. It's already golden in color. They cut it and do the thrashing program, and they sing songs of Krishna while they're thrashing the wheat. The whole village comes. It's big, big festival, stories of Krishna and the wheat. But then left over is the chaff. The chaff is when the wheat is gone. So someone comes along and thrashes the chaff where the wheat is gone. What are they gaining? Nothing. Well, they gain trouble, klishyanti, and misery, kleshala, but they don't get the wheat. No labhyate. Now he's translated, Prabhupada is translated as attaining self-realization. But expand that, and self-realization means God-realization. And for the sake of followers of the Vedas, they want the higher stages, they want liberation, no liberation, no labhyate, no self-realization, what to speak of understanding Krishna. O Almighty Lord, in the past, many yogis, that's this word up here, yoginas, many yogis in this world achieved the platform of devotional service by offering all their endeavors unto you, nijakarma, all their endeavors, and faithfully carrying out their prescribed duties. Through such devotional service perfected, here we go again, perfected by the hearing process, hearing and chanting about you. Kato Upanitaya. So there it is. Yogis engaged in the hearing and chanting process, although their interest may be this or that, connected with the hearing and chanting process, perfected by the process of hearing and chanting about you, they came to understand you, O infallible one. There we go, Achyuta. And could easily surrender to you and achieve your supreme abode. Te gatim param. The hearing and chanting with great attention and humility and focus, like we're trying to do during the festival of the Holy Name. Then purification and approaching the goal of life becomes possible. Text 6. Now, non-devotees, however, cannot realize you in your full personal feature, but they get something. What's that? Nevertheless, it may be possible for them to realize your expansion as the impersonal supreme. How? By cultivating direct perception of the self within the heart. Cultivating direct perception of you from within the heart. But they can do this only by purifying their mind and senses. That's what's down here. Of all conceptions of material distinctions. And all attachment to material sense objects. Only in this way will your impersonal feature manifest itself to them. Now, how practical is that? Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12. How is it possible? Think about it for just a moment. No conceptions of material distinctions. How do you live your life that way? Walk across the ceiling? Or what? How do you to go from point A to point B? No distinction. There's the door and there's the wall and just walk through the wall. How do you live your life where there's no, all conceptions and material distinctions are gone? And all attachment, what to speak of, this little one, all no attachment to material sense objects. Only in this way will your impersonal feature. So how merciful is the bhakti process? How merciful is the bhakti process? It's so exalted. And then he goes on, comparing the gyan process and the bhakti process. In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. Boy, the scientists today, they can't even figure out whether it's particles or waves, right? Heisenberg's uncertainty principles. What to speak of then counting all the particles? Of all the luminaries in the whole universe, supposing they could count all those particles, supposing. Such learned person who amongst these learned persons could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities. How compassionate is the unlimited. And he makes access available to him through the bhakti process. You just have to take the bhakti process. And it's not going to be possible the other way. This other verse 6, good luck. And that's still not seeing his personal feature. What to speak of his feature in Vrindavan? This is a painting of Uddhava speaking to Krishna. Actually he's speaking to Krishna, but it's in reference to later Uddhava speaking to Vidura, where he says, How shall I take shelter of one more merciful? Because there isn't one more merciful. Krishna is the most merciful. Another very beautiful ISKCON painting of Uddhava hearing from Krishna. There's Uddhava Gita in the background. There's Maitreya also hearing this discussion. How merciful is the all-merciful? Brahma's conclusion here. You have unlimited qualities and each of them are expandable to unlimited degree. Yet the impersonalist does not and cannot realize these qualities. In fact, they dismiss them. There's no qualities. How unfortunate. How unfortunate. So, and by speculative process, is it possible? Try to conceive of what unlimitedly beautiful means. Go ahead, close your eyes and think of unlimitedly beautiful. Can't. How beautiful is unlimitedly beautiful? How attractive is unlimitedly attractive? How compassionate is unlimitedly compassionate? By speculative powers, these qualities of Krishna can't be understood. What to speak of his form, what to speak of his feature in Vrindavan, this merciful manifestation of Krishna for the benefit and the love of his devotees. So I now wish to describe both the internal and the external activities of bhakti. We're almost done with this section. Very important verse quoted in Bhagavad Gita purport, something you should always keep with you. Now and then we've been in life or some enormous test and sometimes it doesn't go away. Anybody here that doesn't have one of those? We all have one. I know what mine are. I don't need to share it. Tate nukampam susamikshamano bhujana evatma kritam vipakam hrid vag vapur bir vididam namaste jiveta yo mukti pade svadayabhak. There's this jiveta again. My dear Lord, one who earnestly, nice word here, susamikshamano, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy. Te anukampam. All the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds. So, past misdeeds. This is the past misdeeds, atma kritam and vipakam. These are the reactions to past misdeeds. Awaiting them, not fearing them, not running away, not trying to deny them or stick your head in the sand or whine and complain or whatever. Just waiting for those things to come. We all get ours in due course of time. If not today, tomorrow. If not tomorrow, you know, in 10 days, it'll come. Everyone. And sometimes it just doesn't seem to go away. You patiently wait for it to go away. It doesn't go away. It just keeps going on and on. Patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds. But instead, not putting consciousness there, putting consciousness where? Offering respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body is surely eligible for liberation. For it has become sadayabhak. Mukti pade sadayabhak. It has become his rightful claim. There's so much to say about this verse too. Such a nice verse. Accept our destiny. Like, you know, say yes to Krishna, that whole topic. Say yes to Krishna. Doesn't mean we turn our intelligence off, we don't do anything, we're just dull and dumb. But whatever is coming, we make some practical arrangements for whatever is coming. But we accept it. Like Prabhupada said in answer to the question, is it something that devotees should do is find out about astrology and guide ourselves according to astrology? Prabhupada's answer was, if you know it's going to rain, you might carry an umbrella. That was his answer. So, it's, you know, Rath Yatra Day, we want to know if it's going to rain or not, so we check the weather forecast. It happened in New York. It was supposed to rain, it's supposed to rain. Then last minute they changed it. No, it's not supposed to rain. So we're going to have Rath Yatra anyways, rain or no rain. So if it's going to rain, you may bring an umbrella, you may not bring an umbrella. We're going to have Rath Yatra anyway. We'll go forward with our lives in devotion to Krishna, despite whatever, you know, this destiny is going to come. Same for Brahma. He's done a big boo-boo. He offended Krishna's cowherd boys and calves. That was a big boo-boo. And Krishna was enjoying with them, and he interrupted Krishna's enjoyment. Look out. He's going to get a reaction. So he's saying, I accept this reaction. It's coming. I accept it. The hand of fate. Like King Chitraketu. This is a painting from 6th Canto of Bhagavatam. This is King Chitraketu. Oops. Light went out. There. That's King Chitraketu in his Vimana from Vidyadhara Loka. And Parvati cursed him. You see, seated here, there's Narada Muni and other great sages in the assembly attending the audience and darshan of Lord Shiva, and he gets cursed to die and become a demon. And he just accepted it. Perfect example. Narayana paraksarge na kutashchana bibhyati svarga apavarga narakeshu apitulyarta darshanam. Seeing with equal vision. Whatever is coming, I accept. Krishna's plan, I accept. I may do something. Supposing I have a knee problem, so I'll go to a physical therapist and take care of the whatever a physical therapist can do to help me, so now I can walk properly again. I'll do something. Not passive. I'll do something, but the arrangement of Krishna is the arrangement of Krishna. And I accept the arrangement of Krishna. And continue to offer prayers. So just like Indra got his pride defeated by Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill. So he offers his prayers and just accepting whatever is the plan of the Supreme Lord. So now this particular verse, just three references and we're almost done. Prabhupada speaks about this verse in Nectar Devotion as follows. This statement, this Tat Tenu Kampam verse, should be the guide of all devotees. A devotee perfectly functions. That's us, right? Should, therefore, continue to act in Krishna consciousness seriously, even though there may be so many impediments. When such impediments arise, he should simply think of Krishna and expect his mercy. That is the only solace. If a devotee passes his days in that spirit, it is certainly that he is going to be promoted to the abode of the Lord. So that's under the section of expecting the Lord's mercy. Even when there's reactions coming to us for our past activities. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on this verse, because he has commented in many places on this verse, each, the ones that I could find, he emphasized this word, jiveta, which emphasizes all you have to do is simply live in this way. Just carry on. Just carry on. In a life of devotion, it's sometimes going to be dark, sometimes going to be light, sometimes going to be this, sometimes going to be that. Sometimes honor, sometimes dishonor. Carry on a devotional service. Invest your consciousness fully. And by so doing, remain awake and alive in your relationship with Krishna. That's the injunction. You just tolerate the others. Let them come, let them go. Focus on your relationship with Krishna by this dedication to hearing and chanting about him. And last little reference is from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. See his tears of ecstasy as he's providing for us commentary on these wonderful messages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Here's what commentary. Basically, Brahma has rejected the jnana process, he's accepted the bhakti process to attain Bhagavan, and now the bhakti process is being described as follows. The devotee understands that the happiness and distress that he experiences due to performing bhakti and committing aparadhas are the mercy of the Lord. It is like the father who sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter nimba juice and sometimes embraces and kisses and sometimes admonishes him. The devotee thinks that this is the arrangement of the Lord working for his benefit. Quote, "The Lord knows and I do not know. Karma and time have no effect on the devotee, so it is by his personal arrangement. By his mercy, he sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service." This is the say yes to Krishna message. And keep saying yes to Krishna, regardless of the external circumstances. And the last four will go very quickly. This cluster of verses 9 through 12, where Lord Brahma is, after his glorification of how to understand the inconceivable and the appreciating the unlimited potencies of the unlimited Krishna, he's now going to offer his words of apology. We'll go quickly through these. My Lord, just see my uncivilized impudence. To test your power, I tried to extend my illusory potency to cover you, the unlimited and primeval soul, masters of illusion. What am I compared to you? Just like a small spark in the presence of a great fire. So there's a match on the left and igniting the match, and you can see flying in all directions are little sparks. So we're a little smaller spark than Lord Brahma. Brahma is very, very powerful. What is our position? Tiny, tiny. So he's requesting forgiveness for that impudence in testing Krishna. And then he goes on with more prayers for forgiveness. Therefore, infallible Lord, kindly excuse my offenses. I have taken birth in the mode of passion and am therefore simply foolish, presuming myself a controller. Independent of your lordship, my eyes are blinded by the darkness of ignorance, which caused me to think of myself as the unborn creator of the universe. Please consider that I am your servant and therefore worthy of your compassion. The Sanskrit up here that you can't read is anukampyo mayi. So anukampyo, anukampya. This is an eligible recipient of compassion. What's my credential? I'm your servant. Impudent servant. But in my heart is this wish to be in your service. So please kindly excuse me. That's this word, kshama. Kindly excuse me. text 11. What am I, a small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand? That's how big I am. I am enclosed in a pot-like universe composed of material nature, the total material energy, false ego, ether, air, water, and earth. What is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body, just as particles of dust pass through the opening of a screened window. I'm inside one of those, and those are passing through the pores of your skin like particles of dust through a screen window. There's a image we've probably all seen, light coming through the window and little particles of dust dancing in the light of the sun coming through the window. So he's likening himself to one of those little particles of dust inside a pot-like universe. But those pot-like universes emanate from the pores of your transcendental body, standing before me like a little four-year-old boy. You're inconceivable. So the last verse of this section, oh, Lord Adhoksaja, does a mother take offense when a child within her womb kicks with his legs? And is there anything in existence, whether designated by various philosophers as real or as unreal, that is actually outside your abdomen? So consider me like that little child within your abdomen, like everything else is within you. And I did some kicking. Kindly forgive me. So that's the end of this section. Here's the last image. The text above says the same thing, but you can't read it. So there's Lord Brahma falling and offering his obeisances, and there's Lord Brahma watching the whole scene from the sky. Now he's standing up and offering his prayers. Three things in one picture. Looks like a rooster, not a swan. But his prayers are filled with humility. And for a Vaishnava, humility is very natural. And sometimes our humility gets a little extra nudge. Krishna orchestrated from chapter 12. Krishna orchestrated this whole pastime where he could deliver Agasura and he could reciprocate with the cowherd women and the cows. And strengthen Brahma's humility, show special mercy to Brahma, give Brahma some dart, because Brahma is very dear to Krishna. Very dear to Krishna. So he's giving him some special mercy, even in the course of letting Brahma see his unlimitedness, at least an aspect of his unlimitedness, strengthening his humility. There's other examples where Krishna does this with Brahma, like calling Lord Brahma to Dwarka. Krishna wants to see you, and he comes to Dwarka. And he has to wait because Krishna is busy. So he tells the doorkeeper, says, could you tell me who you are so I can let Krishna know that you've arrived? He said, yes, tell him I'm Lord Brahma. Come to see him. He called me. So the messenger came back and Krishna wanted to know which Lord Brahma. What do you mean which Lord Brahma? There's more than one Lord Brahma? Please tell him Lord Brahma, the father of the four Kumaras and the creator of the universe, has come to see him. Oh, okay, I'll tell him. Krishna invited him. All the Lord Brahmas from all the other universes simultaneously coming and offering their obeisances with their 100, 10, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 heads paying obeisance, this big clatter of sound as their helmets were touching the ground. Brahma became very humble. Krishna wants to keep us humble. So if something happens in your life that helps you become humble, that's good. That's good. That's good. You'll chant your japa better. If you're genuinely humble. If you're like a complainer type, you won't. You'll look at the situation and go, meh, 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 meh. But if you're inspired in devotion, it'll enhance humility. And we're going to hear something further in Lord Brahma's wonderful prayers about Krishna's greatness, realized through the humility and devotion of Lord Brahma. Krishna's disclosing because of that. Wonderful things. Okay, it's only 9:20. Any comments or questions? We have a microphone. Somebody wants to ask something. Yes, do you want to give it up?
Guru Maharaj, I was thinking about the Jnani Prayasa Madhupasya phrase. And I've heard you speak many times about Mother Yashoda in the Damodar Lila pastime, where she's making a discrimination of what she should be doing in devotional service. So she's using a rational faculty. So clarification, it seemed like this verse is specifically talking about in the pursuance of the absolute truth.
Yes.
Versus practicalities of devotional service, one should use one's rational
yes.
faculty.
You've understood correctly.
Huh?
He's asking, Mother Yashoda was discriminating. Is there a difference between discriminating between how to carry out your service and discriminating trying to discern the absolute truth by the power of discrimination? The answer is yes. Practically, you know, let's say you're cooking. You don't just, you know, close your eyes and put anything in the pot and stir. You discriminate this and that. We use our faculty of discrimination in service to Krishna. We use it subordinate to the principle of devotion. We don't replace the principle of devotion with the tendency to discern the absolute truth by our speculative powers. We don't do that. But we deploy the rational faculty in Krishna's service. In service to Krishna. Okay. That was the question. Something else? Okay, we're done. Srila Prabhupada. Oh! Jai Jagannath. Go ahead.
I was wondering if you can define humility, because we're hearing...
Define which?
Humility. Because we're hearing the word humility, and I'm sure for all of us, according to our different subjective achievement in Christian consciousness, is manifesting a different conception, a different image, etc.
Sure, sure.
So if the word Thank isn't you. Defined, there can be no clarity about the discussion.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, let me start with what humility is not. It's not tremor, fear, even the Christian notion of turn the other cheek. That's a material kind. It's a kind of humility, but it's not what's being spoken of here. What's being spoken of here, in very simple terms, humility is the spiritual conception, as Prabhupada has said, God is very great and I'm very small. The spiritual conception. Now, how great is God and how small I am, that they do not know, Prabhupada would say. So understanding the greatness, then in contrast, the tininess of our position in contrast with the greatness of Krishna, the unlimitedness of Krishna. It's in a spiritual conception, it leaves one in the position, a test of whether it's a spiritual conception or not, is the inspiration to be in service to Krishna is strengthened. spiritual conception of humility expands and increases the enthusiasm to be in service to Krishna in a humble mood. So what's that humble again? Recognition of the relation that we have with Krishna, like Brahma said, like a little spark to the big fire. Tiny, tiny, tiny. But our quality is like the great, although we're very, very tiny. So I should be in relationship with the whole. The function of the part in relation to the whole is to serve the whole. It follows. It inspires devotional service. Humility, the wrong kind, one can feel discouraged. Oh, I'm so small, can't do anything. That's not the spiritual conception of humility. It's a mode of ignorance conception of humility. Not a spiritual conception. So a spiritual conception is, we are light, part of the supreme light. We're tiny persons in relation to the supreme person. A spiritual conception of humility. Now, that's going to be, going back to your question, that's going to be variously manifest according to our personality and our nature. I may feel that humility differently than you feel that humility, different than Arjuna feels that humility, different than Madhu Mangal feels that humility, different than anyone else who's in the spiritual conception feels that humility. It'll be variously manifest. But the spiritual conception is the core or basis or foundation. I want to serve Krishna. So the entrance into that mood of service in Vrindavan is not even so much, you know, the majesty of Krishna. He's great and we're tiny. It's a spiritual conception of humility where one oversteps the position of Krishna as the majestic supreme and interact with him in other ways, but inspired by the spontaneous mood of service that then takes on different complexions as his friend Sri Ram saying to Krishna, what kind of big man are you? You always lose. You have to carry me on your shoulders. You're not such a big fellow, people think. But that mood is out of love, and Krishna loves that love and becomes purchased by that love, and it's a deep mystery. But still, that's when he speaks that way, it's with humility or all of the other rasas. The spiritual foundation of humility is there. Thus, one gets gives special pleasure to Krishna and receives special happiness in that loving relationship with Krishna. Oh, but for us, we start with the majesty of Krishna, like in our deity worship or the chanting of the holy name and other forms of devotional service to enter into that deeper contemplation and mood. Thanks for the question. Anything else? We're done. Okay. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. When you were going through Lord Brahma's prayers, 10.14.8, where Lord Brahma is saying, my dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy.
What does he say? Could you speak a little slower? Text 8, he says?
My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim.
Nice verse, huh?
It's really nice, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, especially, you know, as a neophyte, just trying to constantly bring back the consciousness to that position, especially when a certain test or trial is going on for a long time, how to not give in to, let's say, our lower modes, our lower natures, and sort of come away from that and just end up feeling frustrated, like, Krishna,
well,
how long?
there's no substitute for purity. The regulation is to ensure purity. So Krishna's just waiting for that purity. So we pay the price because we're attached to something that's not necessarily pure. That's, you know, our expectation of how things should be, and that's going to bring happiness, and it may not change. Krishna wants to see purity. But he's very kind. He'll give us the strength. So then the shelter of his compassionate nature is our recourse that brings the purity. Here's the good news. We have heard that Krishna never gives us a test which we cannot succeed. Well, to succeed, real success isn't just, yay, I did it. Real success is taking shelter of Krishna. And the conditioning nature is, I'm going to do it. I'm determined. You know, kartaham. And that's not what Krishna wants. Krishna wants us to let go of that and take shelter of him. We still make endeavor, but the endeavor is depending upon Krishna's kindness, which is exactly the response given by Srila Prabhupada in Nectar Devotion. It's a way of life. That verse comes to describe the glories of bhakti. Immediately the next verse is the glories of bhakti in contrast with Gyan process is addressing how to face circumstances where tribulation comes of our past deeds. And it doesn't even just like past misdeeds. It could be good fortune comes. Now how are you going to handle that? And bad fortune, ill fortune comes. How are you going to handle that? What's your relationship? The essence is your relationship with Krishna in either extreme or in any circumstance of life. It's to bring us to that Vrindavan mood. It's to help us come to that. That's the Bhagavatam wants to take us there. Lord Chaitanya wants to take us there. And we have our tribulations that may, if they endure too long or become even more severe, we may throw our hands up in the air and say, bah, humbug, or something. You know, I'm crushed or something. All of these are to help nourish our relationship with Krishna. It certainly requires faith. That was our discussion in Gita Nagari, the role of faith in bhakti. So keep close association with those that have faith, and you know, this is the what to do. And strengthen quantity and quality of hearing and chanting. Strengthen quantity and quality of hearing and chanting. Devote yourself to hearing. Take shelter of Krishna in the ways that he makes himself accessible. And one finds strength to face the tribulation. In fact, the tribulation then shrinks in significance, because the real significant thing is our eternal relationship with Krishna, our eternal life with Krishna. Like, death is a major tribulation. Major, major. Just like recently, Kurmarupa left his body in Vrindavan. Very dear God brother, well known by many, many devotees all over the world. And I'm sure the pain that he was experiencing for some period of time was awful. Who can... Not just, you know, the lights are going to go out, but the tribulation of the whole process of departure. And he just wanted to be with Krishna's cows in Vrindavan. Let me out of this hospice care. have my body decorated with the dust of the cows from Vrindavan. He had shelter in service to Krishna. That was his opportunity or his strength to overcome or bypass or surpass the tribulation. Tribulation didn't go away, but his consciousness went to a higher place. The final test. Yes, over here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is about what you had quoted or read out of from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. I think you read so something of the sort that karma doesn't have an effect on the devotees. So
karma doesn't have an effect on the devotees, so
The arrangements, what's happening in the devotee's life is Krishna's arrangement. You just read it like near the end of class. From
I hope somebody understands her question.
No, I haven't asked the question yet.
Jai Jagannath? So he's beyond karma, so how's he getting karma? That's the question? Is that the question?
The question is, it's more applicable, like applying it for myself. I don't consider myself a devotee, so how can I take shelter?
You don't consider yourself to be a devotee.
I mean, if I would say that I'm a devotee, then like it's almost
well,
like
we'll anoint you. Boom, you are a devotee. Now what?
So I was wondering how to take shelter of this, what you had just quoted.
You're practicing. We're aspiring bhaktas engaged in the sadhana process. Now as far as Rupa Goswami is concerned, you're engaged in uttam bhakti, not an uttam bhakta. But you're engaged in uttam bhakti because you're cultivating that. Not perfectly, but you're cultivating that. And perfection will, according to Rupa Goswami's teaching, continue like that. Same here. Continue like that. Jivaita. Continue like that. And the perfectional stage will come. However long it takes, continue cultivating like that. So you're engaged in the bhakti process, so you're a bhakta, one who is Krishna's devotee. And what that means is Krishna's kindness is in your life. Flip it around and say, supposing you didn't have that mood of bhakti, supposing you didn't have the activities of devotional practice, what would your life look like? Don't think about it too long. Any one of us. So there may be, using language that Prabhupada has given, token reminders of our past activity. He would say we get, you know, a bump on our arm instead of a broken arm. Oh! Instead of a broken arm, etc. Token reminders of our past activity. What to speak of what it would look like if it was the full dose of our past activity. Who could say what that would be like? My goodness. Whew. Right? So, it's not karma is operative in your life, nor is it that you're a pure devotee. So it's, they're token reminders because you're engaged. You know, similar. Are we going to say Lord Brahma is not a pure devotee? Prabhupada would say pure enough. And so, Krishna is engaging him in such a way to strengthen, as Krishna will engage you in such a way to strengthen your position of shelter taking. So circumstances come. It's direct reciprocation of Krishna. Token reminders from Krishna to help you become humble and take full shelter of him. Isn't that nice? You're smiling. Look at that. Krishna is very kind. Good enough?
Thanks for my answer, yes.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.